Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
I saw this app.
I got a hit.
In the new limited series, DTF St. Louis, Jason Bateman, David Harbour, and Linda Cardellini star as three suburbanites who spice up their love lives.
Wow.
Don't miss the new HBO original limited series, DTF St. Louis, premiering March 1st on HBO Max.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway. Wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
If you've listened to this show for a while, you know that if there's one tool I absolutely cannot live without, it's the Onyx Hunt app. I use Onyx year-round to mark spots, find new properties, access landowner information, and so much more. But throughout the year, I tend to use the app differently depending on what I'm doing. Right now, I'm always using it to double-check stream bank easements in the Driftless. And when I'm not doing that, I'm using the slope angle layer to look for pinch points or little knobs that a buck might be betting on. And of course, when I'm in the field scouting, the tracker feature is running at all times to paint a picture of how things move throughout a property. To learn more about all the other features that Onyx offers, head over to onyxmaps.com. We all know there's nothing worse than being cold and wet while you're trying to pursue your favorite game. That's why I trust Huntworth with all my hunting outerwear needs. This past fall was the warmest and driest I've ever been throughout an entire hunting season, and that's all thanks to Huntworth's Heat Boost technology and the DWR waterproof finish on their clothing. I've been wearing the Durham lightweight pants almost every time I hit the field, whether I'm chasing whitetails, busting brush for pheasants, or doing some postseason scouting, and you'd better believe that these things will be my go-to for turkey season as well, thanks to the waterproof seat and knee panels paired with the lightweight, breathable body. I'll probably rock the Grayling hoodie for the early season and eventually transition to the Fallon lightweight shirt when the hot late season starts, and all that's going to be in their Tarnan pattern, which I have absolutely fallen in love with over this past year. Go build your kit today at huntworthgear.com or visit the sporting goods section of your local Farm and Fleet or Fleet Farm to check it out in person. Southwest Wisconsin is home to one of the most unique trout fisheries in the country, with thousands of miles of spring-fed streams twisting their way through valleys, pastures, and prairies. And one of the best ways to experience this fishery is with a fly rod in hand. Good Chance Fly Fishing is your guide to all that the Driftless has to offer, whether you're an experienced angler or you're just looking to try something new and get into fly fishing. find more info and book your trip, visit goodchanceflyfishing.com. If you've listened to this show before, I'm sure you've noticed that if there's one thing that keeps coming up over and over again, it's the importance of public lands and waters. Shoot, I'd venture to guess that 90% of what we talk about on this show takes place on public lands. We all love the challenges we face and the memories we create in these wild places, and we need folks who are in our corner to protect them as well. That's why we're proud to have partnered with the good folks over at the Wisconsin Chapter of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. The Wisconsin BHA Chapter was formed to provide a voice for hunters and anglers throughout Wisconsin that want to protect our public land legacy, and everyone involved worked their tails off to protect public lands and access to those public lands and waters. To stay informed on all things public lands, the issues facing our public lands, policies that might affect them, and to cross paths with some of the coolest outdoorsmen out there, I highly encourage you to join the Wisconsin Chapter of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, or at least the chapter of whatever state you live in. Also, be on the lookout for our Wisconsin Public Land Policy bonus episodes to keep you all in the loop on the legal side of conservation and how things get done here in Wisconsin. To join BHA, visit backcountryhunters.org/join, and to learn more about what's going on here in the Badger State, visit backcountryhunters.org/Wisconsin. What is going on, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the Wisconsin Sportsman Podcast. I'm your host, Pierce Nellis, and this is your home for all things hunting, fishing, and conservation in the Badger State. Folks, I hope you're doing well. Before we dive into this episode, I got a treat for you. You guys get two intros, you get two guests this week. I've got, real quick, on the line with me, our Wisconsin BHA Chapter President, Alec Beckers. We're going to be talking about what's going on in the public land space right now. As I'm sure you've all been seeing online, there's a lot of crazy stuff going on, a lot of spooky stuff involving the sale of public lands. Alec and I are going to sit here real quick and just kind of do a quick breakdown on what's really going on and what all of you should be doing to make your voices heard to protect that public land. Alec, how are we doing today?
Doing well. Wish I would be talking about other things on a Friday evening, but this is important, so we wanted to take the time and ask for some help from all of the listeners.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, man. Can you tell us a little bit about what's going on? Shed some light on all that.
Absolutely. So there's a lot going on with the budget reconciliation bill in the U.S. House of Representatives right now. There's a number of different things that are getting put in and pulled out of this budget reconciliation bill, but the one thing that I need everybody to be aware of and to take action on is the proposal to sell 500,000 acres of public lands in Utah and Nevada as a stipulation of this bill. Why is that important to us? Even in Wisconsin, why does this matter to us? By including it in this bill, it's actually going around an established process that we have for the disposal and the sales of public lands called the Federal Land Transaction Facilitation Act. Including it in their budget reconciliation bill completely goes around that, and it sets a dangerous precedent for all of our public lands in every 50 state. We cannot allow our elected officials to sell off the lands that we own as the citizens of this country, whether it's in Utah, Nevada, Wisconsin, or otherwise. So I need everybody's help to take action on this. And there's one of two ways that you can do this. You can go to backcountryhunters.org/takeaction. And scroll down until you see this oppose public land sales link, and you can take action there to email your representative, or you can call the U.S. Capitol switchboard directly at 202-224-3121. Ask to speak with your representative's office and relay the message that you do not support the sale of public lands, and our representatives should not allow that to pass. We cannot afford this dangerous precedent. We need to take action.
Absolutely, man. And folks, we've talked about it on the show a number of times here. If you follow that link, the backcountryhunters.org/take action, it'll gear it specifically towards the issue at hand for the state at hand, or the state that you reside in. A lot of us here are in Wisconsin, some of us listening from outside the state, but no matter what, go in there. They make it super easy. You put in your information, they pre-write a message. It's totally editable, so if there's something in there that you want to cut out or something that you want to add, you can absolutely do that, and it'll send it right off to your state representative and put it in their mailbox. Usually you'll get an automatic reply of some sort, or sometimes even a personally written one. I've gotten a couple of those so far this year, but could not be easier. Follow that link. You can pause the episode right now. That's going to be one of the first things in the show notes that you'll see on this episode. And Alec, anything else we're forgetting?
I hope this isn't the case, but I am afraid that this will not be the last time we're facing this issue. And we just need to plant our flag, draw the line in the sand, and say no to public land sales. Keep public lands in public hands. Tell your representatives.
Absolutely. You heard it here, folks. Backcountryhunters.org/take action, or call the Capitol Switchboard at 202-224-3121 and ask to speak with your representative. With that, let's get on to the episode, Talking Turkeys with Drew Schlemm. Folks, I hope you're doing well. I hope you're having a good week outside and having some luck in these late season turkey hunts here. The morels have been popping up. The birds are starting to get lonely. I kind of got my butt kicked and ended up just like beating myself into the ground. So if I sound like crap, it's because I feel like crap and came down with a little bit of a cold. But man, period four. So this is going to come out the last day of period five for Wisconsin's turkey season here. Period four was an absolute roller coaster for a number of reasons that we're going to dive into here. Ended up having some success, but it was a long, long road of weird stuff happening to get there. But got to share a hunt with Drew Schlemm from the Predator podcast last Friday. And I've got Drew on the line to, because we both had some weird stuff happen that week and stuff. You had some success right off the bat, but we're going to dive into that. And Drew, how are we doing today, man?
Doing awesome, man. I actually just kind of shook the cold and little thing I had going too after 7 days of grinding. I'm feeling better finally, and I see you got the same thing, the turkey season rundown. Yep. So
yeah, dude, it was like last week. I usually I'm pretty good about it, where it's like, okay, I'm pretty tired on Monday, I'll get to bed early. And you know, it ended up being every single night going forward, I had less and less and less and less sleep. And
right,
it takes a toll on you, man, especially when you're,
yes,
you're
it does.
Throwing the miles on and everything. Dude, I'm embarrassed to say this. I just do like the little step tracker thing on my phone and all that, right?
Yeah.
I ended up tallying it all up. I covered like 42 miles last week.
Wow. Yeah.
And I still didn't kill a bird. That was 42 miles prior to actually capitalizing on my my final hunt on Sunday. And dude, it was just brutal. Thank God it wasn't super hot, but like,
yeah,
I've never worked that hard for a dang turkey in my life. And yeah, we're feeling it now. We're paying for it.
Yeah, no, I hear you. Yeah, it was a weird week, like you said. And yeah, if a guy would have stuck a decoy in the ground a little harder one day, you would have killed one.
Well, we'll get to that. We'll get to that. But you had some success at least early on in period four, didn't you?
Yeah. And then I think, was it Saturday? Saturday, I think we had one. No, Sunday morning. Yep. Sunday morning, we had one piled right in, right off the roost, piled right in. We got him. Saturday morning, we had a really close call. Should have, you know, I mean, I say should have. I don't think we would have done anything different going back on it. Mm-hmm. Just didn't pan out. Unfortunately, like it does a lot of times. So, cause we actually went and hunted those birds that we hunted on Friday. Yep. And they kind of did the same thing, and just, we had a new hunter. So just, you know, sometimes the situation just doesn't happen in a way that's going to allow a new hunter to make a shot. And it just didn't. So mm-hmm. That is what it is.
Yeah. Well, on the note of new hunters and stuff too, you took, a brand new hunter out earlier during period four and everything, and got her on a bird. How did that hunt play out?
Yeah, actually, I got to take probably the first time I've ever taken a girl. Just doesn't seem like there's as many, you know, ladies that turkey hunt for some reason. So it was cool to be able to take her out. I give away a hunt every year at the local NWTF chapter. So they auction it off, and you know, every year I get to take somebody new hunting. I kind of take, you know, mostly friends, family, you know, whatever, people that I know generally. So doing that every year, I get a chance to meet somebody new generally. So it's kind of fun. I've gotten to meet some good people over the years doing it. And I believe Morgan shot several turkeys, but she had kind of had a rough patch of luck and whatnot. I think she said it had been like maybe 10 years since she'd shot one in Wisconsin. Wow. So the first morning we went out, I thought that I had watched the birds the night before. I had sort of misjudged where they were by like maybe 150 yards, and we were just in the wrong spot. We had one walk right behind us, but I just made a mistake on where they were. I saw one hen in the tree, and I thought they were all going to be in that spot, and they weren't. So that was my mistake on that. And then the next night, I watched them literally for an hour and a half to watch them go to the limb to make sure that I was in the right spot the next day. And honestly, the way I explained it to her and the way I envisioned it in my head was exactly how it went. They flew down, they came from right to left. One thing that I was kind of explaining to her was we were sitting in a blind, which I don't do a lot of, but I was kind of explaining to her how I set the decoys kind of left-hand side of the blind, expected the birds to come from the right-hand side, just kind of keep their eyes off of us and, you know, out of the line of sight from the decoys to, you know, to where they're coming from. And it just panned out just perfect. And we had them come in right off the roost, and she made a great shot. It was actually the biggest bird that we've killed, or that I've seen killed this year. It was like 26 pounds with a 12 inch beard and inch and a half spurs. So it was awesome. And, you know, it's just, you know, she was jacked and it was exciting. So that's, you know, that's what I really enjoy, is seeing other people, their excitement, and the challenge of getting a bird in front of somebody else is always a fun one. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, dude. Yeah. Well, I mean, even when you and I went out on Friday, you did a heck of a job doing that. Had the birds just played ball and actually done what we'd hoped them, hoped that they would do right off the roost and everything. They kind of had other plans, but still, man, that was, that's an awesome experience to be able to like auction off to folks, you know, through the NWTF, and, you know, have those proceeds go to a cool place and, you know, a good cause and all that sort of stuff. And like you said, get to meet new people and get them on birds and share those experiences. Like, doesn't get any better than that. How was, how was your own personal hunt?
Let's see. I had second season. And me and my buddy came over, he had second season too. And we actually shot a double, and, it was kind of a mess of a hunt from the start. We were able to watch the birds go to, like, we sort of knew where they were. Like, I knew they were in one of two places. My gut was telling me that they were in the one spot and whatever. So we knew, like I said, I don't like to sit in the blind. So I'm in a spot where 99% of people would sit in the blind or should sit in the blind, but I just prefer not to. So, you know, we're making do with what we got. So we basically got back in there early. We're like, all right, we're going to figure out where we're going to sit. So I have me, my buddy Lucas, who has a tag. Us two have a tag. I got AJ running the camera, and then I have my buddy Chris with, who's doing photography. So we have a whole crew of people, no blind, no nothing. So we had kind of hemmed and hawed, stood in this one spot. We're like, should we sit here? And I'm like, if they're there, I want to be here. But if they're deep in the corner, I want to be there. So, you know, we talked ourselves into moving up a little farther. We sat down, and the birds were like, I don't know, 60 yards away in the tree, straight behind us, which is like my least favorite thing, is when birds are straight behind you. And, you know, I had envisioned in my head where I thought they I've hunted this spot for years, so I kind of knew where they like to come across. You know, it was a nice five stretch, you know, barbed wire fence that nobody's crossing without ripping their pants. So I kind of knew where they might cross or where I thought they were going to cross. And of course, the birds fly down and they wanted to cross right where we were sitting. And so basically, we had those birds within 40 yards for probably, I don't know, 45 minutes. We had them at 20 yards, 15 yards, I mean, straight behind us. Just, I was like leaned over, kind of looking like my neck is recovered now from sitting there for that long staring at them. But, and they just, we just held calm. We had a strutter decoy out in the field in front of us, and they worked down the hill away from us, actually, finally, which I was so glad. We were able to like get our bearings for a second, and then I pulled my slate call out because I was never able to get my slate call out because they were so close and I couldn't move. There was five longbeards, there was seven or eight jakes, there was hens. Holy, I mean, there smokes. Was a whole mess of birds in there. So they started going down the hill, and I just pulled out my slate call. Like, I just went kind of last ditch effort. I don't know if I did. I probably did. I always do that, I guess, if birds go the other way or whatever. I always just pull out, start calling. Like, what's the worst that can happen? They don't come in, or maybe something else is around that I don't know about, whatever. So I just started hammering on my slate call, and just like right away, all of a sudden, closer, closer, closer. And then all of a sudden, it's like, all right, they're coming. Like, here they come. And then they came in around us, came in from the left, piled right into the strutter three times did. And my buddy Lucas missed the first. Well, they hit the decoy and then they scattered. Like, they scared themselves and they scattered.
Okay.
And then he shot, missed. One, like, kind of split off to the right and stood there. And I'm like, well, I might as well shoot one. Like, we're here. We got birds in front of us. Like, I might as well shoot one. So I shot one. And then right after, he got his reloaded and he shot one, and we ended up with a double. So
that's awesome.
The video is out on YouTube. It was an interesting hunt, but obviously it's hard to portray like everything that happened and them birds being behind us, and because we didn't get a lot of that on film. Mm-hmm. But it was somehow my action camera died like literally right before I shot. It ran for 50 minutes or something. And Jeez. Then right before I shot, it turned off.
Yeah,
so
of course. Yeah, yeah. Dude, I was seriously impressed by the filming setup that you guys had. And like, it was cool getting to watch you and AJ kind of coordinate where each of you were going to sit and how are you going to get the different angles and all that kind of stuff. Cause it was, you know, you and AJ on cameras, you were calling, AJ was filming off the tripod, and then Ben and I were hunting. And yep. I mean, dude, four guys running around just trying to coordinate all that. Like, I was seriously impressed. And, dude, I learned a ton just getting to watch you guys. You know, I don't know. I feel like you always gain a lot by just getting to hunt with different people and, you know, see how they move through the woods and the ways that they call and everything. I mean, shoot, I told you after I killed that bird on Sunday, like, I wouldn't have killed that bird had I not gone hunting with you guys on Friday, because it completely changed the way that I was calling. And we'll get to that there. But dude, I want to rewind a little bit to a couple things you said there. The first one, you mentioned getting in there early. This time of year, when you're, I mean, not really even this time of year, during turkey season, when you've got birds roosted, you know where they're at, you're going to try and put a play on them right off the roost. How early do you generally like to get in before first light?
So I think that I probably go earlier than most people do. Maybe you thought this to yourself as I told you what time to meet us that day, but I was like, my dad always says when I tell him what time we need to be there, he always says it's a half hour sooner than we need to be there. So, but I'm the type of person that I would rather be in a half an hour early than 1 minute late, because I've been late and I've seen how it can take the hunt right out. I mean, you just lose the hunt right away from spooking them, from they see you, whatever, you know. And I think for me, the style that I like to hunt is I'm typically watching birds or listening or something of birds the night before, and I'm typically getting in tight to the roost, like inside of 100 yards, probably majority of the time. So, you know, I think if you're 300-400 yards away from a roost or whatever, I think, you know, certainly you can go in later, you know, or if you're not in the line of sight. I know AJ brought up this morning that we, 1 year we killed in the spot we were at this morning, and he was like, remember that time we walked in here and the birds were gobbling? And I'm like, yeah, because they were roosted over there and, you know, they couldn't see us come in. But yeah, I think for me, if I figure, like, let's say what I was basing on is when is first gobble typically. So if I think the first gobble is going to be at 4:45 right now, then that means I need to be set up by 4:15 and ready.
Sure.
I want to be in there a half an hour before I think the first bird's going to gobble. And with a full moon, I would even maybe be earlier, but I would always just general rule half an hour before I think the first gobble is going to be. If you don't know when the first gobble is going to be, the first gobble is probably a half an hour before first light, roughly. Mm-hmm. Half hour to maybe 15 minutes, but somewhere in that 15 minute window is probably going to be when they're going to start gobbling. Sure. It's probably general. Yeah. I mean, it gets weird this time of year. I've noticed, like, this morning, it seems like it's later and later now that they start gobbling again, but like, there was times where we were hearing gobbles, you know, second season at like 4:37, you know.
Holy smokes.
And like, I can't remember what time it was this morning. It had to be, it's been right around 4:45, but it seemed like it was earlier for a bit there. But yeah, I know one time years ago, if my buddies that were with me on that hunt remember this, we went into a spot 1 year on a full moon where we were going basically right underneath these birds. And I mean, I try to walk the shadows. I mean, we're trying to stay completely undetected, because if you ever watch turkeys in the trees in the night or in a full moon, they do typically know that you're there or something is there. Like, you'll see them like looking around or like whatever, but if you can get them in a stone sleep, that's obviously the best. But, I've put up ground blinds in the middle of the night before, and like we did it in the youth season this year, and you can see the birds up in the trees, you know, stretch necking, looking around, whatever. But one time we did on a full moon, we went into a spot at 2:30 in the morning.
Oh,
and
gosh.
And we sat pretty much right underneath these birds. It was like 20 degrees. And I literally sat down, pointed my gun where they were going to fly down, never moved until I pulled the trigger. And the birds never gobbled one time. We had a camera guy that was like 100 yards away up the hill. Because I had one camera guy right behind me, and then I had one that was up the hill like 100 yards. That guy never knew there was a bird there. But those things were spitting and drumming so loud over top of our heads that we knew they were there. And they flew down, strutted right in front of me, and I killed the one, and I was so cold. I remember being so frozen cold that morning. And me and my buddy still joke about that one, that we can't believe that we did that, but it worked. So,
dude,
they can call me crazy, but it worked.
Dude, 2:30 in the morning and being able to sit still for that long. Like, did you doze off at all while you were?
No, I'm not a sleeper though. So,
oh my God.
And we weren't there that long. And then they started spinning and drumming.
Okay.
So, gotcha. I mean, by the time we got situated and whatever, you know, it was probably 3:30 by the time we got like fully ready. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was, I know that they for sure think I'm nuts for that one.
Hey, it worked out though. And that's,
yeah.
That's something to back it up. If they would have pitched down totally away from you and, you know, you would have had to explain yourself after that, would have been a different story. But,
yeah, that's for sure.
That's freaking wild, man. That's sweet. Because I was sitting there, I was trying to, after we hunted on Friday, I was trying to remember, I was like, what time did we get out there? What time were we set up? Like, I know it was quite a while, you know, before we actually.
It was, I think it was about 4:30 we were set up.
Yeah, I think you're about right. Yeah. Yeah, I just, all I could remember, I was like, all right, we're going to meet at the gas station at 4:00. And then after that, we'll figure it out. Like,
yeah, which I would say we were not early. Like, again, that full moon, I think, adds to that, because we were standing there kind of trying to figure out where we were going to sit, and they started like the Jake started yelping or something.
Right. Yeah.
You know, as we're standing there 50 yards away from him.
Yeah, definitely, dude. Yeah, that was one of the biggest things that jumped out to me, was just like the timing and like how early we got in there and got set up. And, you know, a lot of times I'm kind of flying by the seat of my pants and trying to get in there. Like, probably right. I end up eating my own words by, you know, showing pretty much getting within 100 yards, but not to my spot right at first gobble. And then I'm sitting there like belly crawling for another 100 right. yards trying to figure things out,
right.
breaking sticks, or I'm pinned down until they fly down and stuff like that. And that was a big reason that I killed the bird that I did. And you know, like you said, with the full moon too, that was one of the things that definitely gave us some grief last week, I think, was just how bright yeah. it was. And on top of it, the property that I was hunting, they all roost facing east. And so it's really, really easy to get skylined and all that yep. kind of stuff. So yeah, that was, I don't know, lots of factors there. Another thing you mentioned yeah, in there was, you know, you had a strutter decoy set up and yep. everything. I know that you had two hens when we went out. We had carried the strutter with, once we found that other group of strutters that were in that field right before we wrapped up. How do you, I think we talked about this last spring when we did our turkey episode, but remind me again, how do you like to kind of discern between, I'm going to throw a Jake decoy out, a couple of hens, a strutter, like what's your yep. decoy theory?
So I guess my kind of general rules, so I always tell people that I'm spoiled and that I usually get to watch birds either the night before or for a period of time before I'm going to hunt them. Mm-hmm. So I usually get a feel for how they act and what, you know, what triggers them. Is a lone tom, you know, coming by the group, and do they run it off every time? You know, are there two strutters with a bunch of hens? Is there one strutter with a bunch of hens, whatever? So I get this question a lot. And how I generally answer it is, if there's a lot of birds, strutter. If there's a lot of jakes in a place, strutter. If there's one tom with a whole bunch of hens, or like two toms and a bunch of hens, I usually go with a jake. One thing that I do believe pretty certain is that if there are jakes or a bunch of jakes on a farm that you know of, you know, I think a lot of people might overlook that part. You know, I think a lot of people just go throw their decoys out and mm-hmm. they either work or they don't. I think if there's a lot of jakes on a farm, or, you know, one group of four or five jakes, whatever, I think a jake decoy can be very ineffective. I saw it happen on a farm this year where we had a bird coming in just absolutely hammering every call, closing the distance fast. He came up, he saw that jake decoy, and immediately never made another sound, and he went the other way. And he never, ever spoke another word.
Hmm.
And then I went into the same farm last week with a strutter and one piled right in and killed it. Now, I'm not saying it was the same bird, because I don't think it was. But just the reactions to, you know, those jake squads will run toms all over the place and chase them and pester them. And I just think that a lot of times if there's jakes on a farm, it can be really ineffective to use a jake decoy. So, especially right now too, I'm getting into more of using just hens, just because hens are going to nest so much faster in the morning and birds are more lonely.
Right.
But if I see a lone bird going into roost at night by himself, and I know he's by himself, I'm definitely only going to use hens, because I've had a lot of bad luck with, like, you throw a jake and a hen out, and then you call this lone bird up who's all by himself. He's coming in hammering, you know, you got him just like you want him. And then he sees that jake and he's like, screw this, I'm out. Like, I was coming thinking there was a lone hen here for easy pickings. Mm-hmm. So, I've had better luck with just hens, when it comes to lone birds. People have their opinions. You shouldn't use decoys. You shouldn't this, whatever. And, you know, I certainly have no problem not using decoys, and I have no, you know, I would not struggle to go film my tag if I couldn't use decoys, but I'm trying to film it. I'm oftentimes trying to get a person who's much less experienced than me, a turkey. I'm trying to get a turkey that's in a wide open field that There's sometimes, I believe, no other way. Unless you have some visual aid, they will come to a certain distance long out of shooting range and not come in.
Right.
So, you know, I just think that, especially for the filming aspect for us, is what we like, you know, to use. And I also like when they come right up into your lap. I mean, it's just an exciting experience. So, yeah, I would say to come back to your question, just in general, the general rule for me is if there's a lot of birds, I'm using a strutter. If there's Jake decoys, or if there's Jakes on the farm, I'm using a strutter. If there's just one tom with a bunch of hens, or, you know, two or three toms with a bunch of hens, I think a Jake can work. I think a strutter can work. And I oftentimes think that if they're going to come into a decoy, it might not matter what one you use. So, you know, sometimes I don't think, the only thing I really advise people is like, if you know there's a bunch of Jakes on your farm, or on the farm you're going to hunt, just don't use Jake decoy. Use a strutter. And gotcha. I think you have better luck. But something to pay attention to, I think, you know, while you're looking at your cell camera pictures or your glassing or whatever, just pay attention if there's Jakes there. Mm-hmm. I think that can help you be successful sooner.
Yeah.
Or faster.
Definitely. Dude, on that note, though, of cell cams and stuff, you're one of the first guys that I've seen use cell cams consistently, I guess more strategically, for hunting turkeys, you know, almost like you're, yeah, almost as though you're like hunting deer. Like it's like that level of like strategy and stuff like that. Can you share a little bit on, what your turkey cell cam strategy is?
Yeah. So I do like to use cell cams. To be quite frankly honest with you, they don't help me kill birds very often, but sometimes at some point they're going to. They haven't this year, in years past they have. You know, I have them, so, you know, a lot of my spots I can see from some distance, or I can see portions of farms, or I can listen to them to some extent. Some of them I can't, and some of them there's spots that are way back in some place, you know, you can't see it from anywhere. Literally, you would never see birds there unless you went and hunted there and or sat back there, you know. So I use cell cams in places like that, just because it's another eye, you know, for me. And it just helps you get in the game. Or like that one night when you don't see anything, can't find anything, all of a sudden your cell cam goes off. Oh, there's a tom going into that corner to roost, you know. So now I know, hey, there's birds in that corner. You know, you still got to pick if they're going to go high or low or what they're going to do. But I think it can help you just get in the game when you otherwise wouldn't be. And, you know, it's hard to say, because I see a lot of inconsistencies with turkeys and cell cams. So, like, I'll get pictures one day, like in a whole bunch of pictures in one day in one spot, and then I won't get a picture of anything for 2 more days or 3 days. So it's not like clockwork where you can just, oh, my cell cams are getting these turkeys every day at, you know, 9 o'clock. I'm going to go sit there at 9 o'clock. And I'm going to kill one. You know, I think, you know, certainly that could happen, but the areas that I have my cell cameras, I don't typically see a lot of consistency in them. You know, I just, the other thing I noticed too, is that turkeys tend to avoid the cameras a lot, or, you know, you might get a picture of him once every 5 days, but he might've been there every day. You just might not have walked right in front of your camera. Like, or a lot of times I've had happen, like I've been getting pictures of a bird a lot in a spot. I go back in there and hunt. All of a sudden there's way more birds than I knew of. So they certainly help me, but they don't tell the whole story. And, you know, I have the same mindset when it comes to deer hunting too. So I never get too wrapped up in, you know, what I'm getting on my cameras, sure. But it certainly, you know, no intel is bad intel. Mm-hmm. So I try to take every little bit, because like I said, I'm always taking, you know, youth hunters, new hunters, whatever. And if I can, I don't want to waste their time or my time really, but I don't want to take them, you know, on a wild goose chase and, you know, not hear any birds. The biggest thing too is like, you at least want to hear birds on the roost.
Right.
Like if you're in the game and you hear birds on the roost, worst case scenario is if you see some, hear some, they don't come in. A lot of people are usually happy. And at least then we can go move, make a play on something else. But going out there, sitting down, and not hearing anything within, you know, 500 yards is a pretty rough start.
Yeah,
and then
definitely.
People are looking at me like, why am I hunting with you, you know?
Yep. Yeah, for sure. No, that's a really, really good point, too. And, you know, you're also hunting on a lot of ground. I mean, I was blown away by the amount of properties you had permission on and everything, all connected to one another as well. I mean, it was like an entire creek bottom.
Yeah, in that area we were in, yeah.
Yeah, that was like really, I mean, you have to at that point, you need the extra eyes of a camera and everything. But it was also cool where we started. We could hear every freaking gobbler, you know, that was in that, that system over there. Like it was pretty sweet. And, you know, we had that one that was just hammering over by that silo.
Yeah.
We ended up getting there just a little bit too late on, but I mean, it was, I don't know. I was impressed by how much you could hear in that area and also how much you could see from the road to actually be able to do your scouting that way. And I mean, shoot, you even said when we hunted on Friday that the night before you were like a mile away just watching those birds fly up into that field there. So it was, that's pretty cool. And you know, I'm right there with you, dude. Like after this last week, I've been crashing at my folks' place while they've been off having fun in New Zealand for the last 2 weeks. And so it kind of worked out nice that I had a couple of turkey tags in my pocket, but dude,
for sure.
After this last week, I can tell you probably within 50 yards where every freaking gobbler roosts on a given evening. And, you know, I don't have permission on all of it, but you know, I know at least where they are and everything. And you know, it was that evening before intel is just totally invaluable. And whether you see it or you hear it, you know, just in making that play for the next day. But yeah, that's awesome, dude. Yeah, I was struggling, man. It was really rough while you were off shooting doubles and everything. I had good hunts. I was in birds the entire time, but it was just one of those things I couldn't seal the deal. I couldn't, and I think part of it too is I learned a lot in the things that I screwed up. I'll preface it with that, but you know, had two gobblers up this little draw that I had permission in. Basically, it kind of lays out a little bit like a turkey foot. Basically, or I guess kind of like a Y, if you were to picture like the stem of the Y being like the bottom of the draw, and then two, you know, little ditches going up that fork off. And there was a gobbler roosted on the left fork and on the right fork. And I figured if I could sneak in there, maybe kind of at the where the two of them come together, just up above it, I might be able to call one down into the timber. And night one or morning one, I did. I had one come down with the hen, and he came in and he was just hung up at like 60 yards and he had a perfect little strut zone. I should have been, you know, three trees closer and I would have sealed the deal. But, you know, he came in just hammering his butt off and then ended up walking away. I called at him. He spun back around, hammered at me, and then like it still couldn't see me. So he kept walking away a little bit. And then I called him again and he kept hammering. And then my girlfriend was, still asleep. And so I ran back to the house and I was like, hey, there's a bird in here that's just going nuts. Like, do you want to come out and we can see if we can like kill this thing in the woods? And so she came out. She likes hearing him strut or hearing him gobble and seeing him strut and everything. And we crept up in between the two forks and got set up, and that bird was still going crazy. And I called a little bit and he hammered out in this field and then finally hammered again. He was a little bit closer. We were set up. And he got set up really fast. Thought he was going to come off to my right. And then we see that big old head pop up just to the left of my gun barrel, kind of to my weak side. And he stuck it up there for maybe 2 seconds and then dropped back down and started putting at us. And off he went. So that was kind of the end of that one. And then I ended up getting permission across the road where I heard a bunch of birds gobbling midday. Saw him up on the hill in this meadow, you know, strutting and everything. And ended up not going over there that day, but the next morning went after that same bird that was up that draw, and he was roosted in the same spot. Tried creeping in. I was like, all right, I know where I need to get. I need to get to the field edge, and then I should be able to put the moves on him. Well, that's where I learned the importance of getting in there half hour before first gobble, because I was down in that ditch and I was pinned down between two birds and couldn't really do anything. By the time I got up there, you know, those birds were 150, 200 yards out in the field, and there's nothing I could really do to call him back down. So then the third morning,
I'm like, all right, we're going to get up there. We're going to decoy up and it's going to be awesome. And the birds roosted, the one on the left roosted in the same spot, but he, I think, saw me or heard me when I was getting in there. He flew down, kind of went up on the ridge to the left, and then made a big, big loop and just ended up not actually coming down to us. Now, luckily, there was another group of toms with a couple of hens that worked all the way across this ridge off to my kind of the, I guess that'd be the south, heading north. And they did this big loop around. I could hear these hens going crazy. So I was calling back and forth with them and just arguing with them. And then finally, you know, hearing these gobbles in that group and everything, see some heads pop up over the horizon. And one of these gobblers was just pissed and he was beating the heck out of every single one of the toms that was with him. Or I guess there were two other toms, chasing him off, pecking him, trying to kick him, all sorts of stuff, ran him all the way down. And then finally he was maybe 80 yards from me off to my left. I got the camera rolling. I called. He sees the decoy, starts working his way in, putting on a show, strutting, comes into like 15 yards. And I should have putted at him or yelped at him, just something to make him stick his head up away from his body, because he was facing me and he kind of leaned forward so that he was like almost like he was going to go reach down and feed. And I had a honeysuckle bush in front of me. I saw like the white of his head. Now I thought I was right on it, but I should have done something to get him to stick that neck up so that I had a little bit bigger target, a little more surface area, because I ended up just buzzing right over his back. And he takes off, missed him at like 15 yards, just drove me nuts, and off he went. So that sucked. That was yep. You know, $20 in TSS down the drain. And
yep, that's a tough one.
Yeah, not good for the confidence there. But then I text the neighbor. He's got birds going crazy over across his side. So I'm like, all right, something was up with the 12 gauge. I'm going to leave it. I'm going to go with the 410. I got some TSS. Now, the only thing with that was I was a little nervous because this 410 has a fixed full choke, which I figured, you know what? Inside of 30, I should be okay. Shooting TSS, it should be all right. I get up there, never been on this property before, following this little food plot kind of towards where I saw these birds strutting the day before. And I'm just hugging the bushes basically on the uphill side of it. And I peek my head around the corner and all I see is a fan popped up and everything. So I immediately duck back into the bushes, drop back down, start going prone and crawl up under the shade of this honeysuckle bush. And I start yelping, you know, clucking and stuff just a little bit. And slowly I see the tips of that fan come around the corner. I see this big red head coming right at me. And I still don't know what happened. Like I have no clue. It's kind of still eating at me that I don't know quite what happened. I don't know if I just clean missed or if he was in like a quarter strut and those feathers kind of just absorbed the shot because it was a lighter shot. Like I still don't know. But he comes into 30. I'm thinking this bird is toast. I let drive. He basically flops back, dives into the bush, and then I pop up going over to look at him. And then all of a sudden he pops up in the bushes, starts running, takes off, flies all the way across the valley out of my life, seemingly unscathed. I couldn't find a feather. I couldn't find like anything on the ground, no blood, no anything. And so that immediately took my confidence out of the 410. So that sucker went back in the closet. And then I'm sitting there licking my wounds. I'm looking around and I'm like, okay, I can figure out something for the afternoon. At this point, I'm more just like starting to get kind of pissed that I keep messing things up. And so hunted the whole afternoon, hunted the evening, all that sort of stuff. And I was able to put the moves on a gobbler. He just didn't come in. Then I got dark. So I took off. Next day, go back after that bird that was up the draw. He ends up taking off kind of straight out in front of me, wraps down to the south, all the way across this big, this kind of like ridge system up in this field. And I'm thinking, okay, I can probably drop down out of here, go up through this draw, and then stick decoys out on the right, or at least maybe get in front of him, just try and cut him off. Well, as I do that, as I'm headed up, I'm just in between these two trees, and I look up. And that sucker's way further ahead than I thought he was. He spots me. He takes off over the hill, out of my life, nothing I can do. And then I ran around again, just chasing my tail, chasing gobbles, couldn't figure it out. And then luckily you texted me and you were like, hey, you want to hunt Friday morning? So I thought, I need all the help I can get right now. Absolutely. Let's make it happen. And well, I'll let you take it a little bit. What was the game plan going in for our hunt on Friday?
Yeah. So yeah, Pierce texted me. He's like, yeah, I just warning you, I'm bad luck. So I'm like, oh, whatever, dude, like everybody's bad luck. Let's go. Whatever. So I had found these birds. There's a pretty good group of birds. I believe there was four toms. There was four jakes, some hens. I watched them that night before. They're in a spot where historically there's always been a big bunch of birds. There has not been birds there this year. I believe it's because there were so many jakes on this farm. There was like 12 to 15 jakes that were just kind of ruling the roost on this farm. So I had spotted the group of birds up there for the first time this year. Watched them go all the way back to roost in the corner where they always do. They were higher than normal, which you saw when we were walking in. Like, we were walking in the, you know, at 4:15, and we were 200 yards probably away from them, and we could see them in the trees. Yep. Like, they were up way high, bare trees right on the edge of the field. Like, we picked them out from a long ways away. You know, we knew they were there, so whatever, but we also, you know, I always think, like, calm, crisp, sunny morning, like, if birds are going to go high or low, they will, better chance they're going high on those days. You know, if it's breezy, cloudy, overcast, whatever, I'll take my chances on the bottom, because that's, you know, the age old question of turkey hunting. Are they going to go high or are they going to go low? You know, everywhere you go. So I thought, you know, hey, this is the first time I've seen them up there. They're roosted way up high on the field edge. They're definitely going high. So we go set up, and, you know, we were, I don't know how far away they were, maybe 50, 60 yards, I would guess. Mm-hmm. I would say, and, you know, I thought we had a pretty good game plan, pretty good setup, and wings flew and they never landed. So they flew way off this bluff and, into the bottom, and,
an insane distance too. Like,
yeah, they flew probably 300-400 yards, probably. Yeah, I would guess.
Yeah, no, we were joking about it, because it's like none of us heard wing beats at all. So they probably just leaned forward off of those trees and just glided straight down into that bottom. I couldn't believe they made it that far.
Yeah, so they went a long ways. We were immediately like game over. I mean, went from like cameras rolling, like everybody's ready, we're on high alert, to they're gone. Like, literally in 1 minute, it was over. So, yeah, so back to the truck we went, and it was, what time was it? Like 5:40? I don't know.
Something like that. Yeah, I remember you saying, I guess we're going to be mobile by 6. So.
Yeah. So we got out of there, and I think we went around, you know, a few different areas that I know birds are at, and it was, for whatever reason that day, you know, I can never figure out turkeys and why one day, you know, they're gobbling everywhere all morning long, and then the next day is the same conditions, you know, and you don't hear a thing. Well, it was one of those days where we weren't hearing a thing. And, you know, we bounced around to, you know, several, you know, known areas where there was birds, you know, an hour earlier that we could hear. Mm-hmm. You know, that one was hammering, that we were there probably, I would guess it was an hour to maybe 2 hours later, we were kind of in the same area. And we just never could strike anything up, never even really saw anything. And then, you know, finally it was like, when it was like 9 or 10 by the time we found a pretty good group of birds. We snuck up this fence line. We kind of got, I don't know how far away they were, probably 150, 200 yards, I would guess. And we knew there was multiple toms, so we brought the strutter decoy. And our plan was, we were just going to get the decoy set up. We were going to sit back, call, you know, hopefully they see the decoy and hopefully work in eventually. Well, we got set up. I stuck the strutter decoy in the ground. I crawled back, start calling, whatever. And sure enough, the one is coming. Like, one of them's breaking. He's coming pretty quick. And then it's like, okay, there's another one coming, which we had two guys, two tags. There's four toms. We're like, perfect. So they're fully committed at this point. I mean, they're at probably 80 yards, I would guess, yeah, and closing fast. And all of a sudden I hear AJ say something, and then I turn my head, and the strutter decoy blows over because someone didn't stick it in the ground. Dude,
in the slowest fashion ever, too. I can see the further bird, like, off in the distance, coming in, stopping, strutting, doing his whole thing. And as we're, like, getting ready, like, both of us are clicking the safety off. All of a sudden, I just see movement off to my right where the decoy was. And just the slowest, just tip down onto its side.
Yeah, so the thing tips over, and I'm like, oh, no. And, like, we're completely screwed. Like, they're way too close, way too in the open. Like, there's nothing we can do about it. So right away, I'm like, no, like, this is terrible. Well, then I'm watching and I'm like, this thing doesn't care. Like, he's going to come in regardless, which, you know, I think, you know, I don't know. I watched the footage and I watched it all. Like, the footage is absolutely perfect, of course. And, you know, they came to, like, probably, I think that closer one, the one that was closer kind of ran the one off. So, like, we thought we were going to have two come piling in. Mm-hmm. Well, that one kind of bumped the one off, so he ended up hanging up out there at, like, the 80 yards just because the other one was coming in. And then that closer one got to, like, I think he was probably roughly 40.
Yep.
I mean, you guys probably could see him better than I could, but I watched the footage back, too, and I was like, oh, my gosh. You know, and he just never really gave us a, you know, because I was saying, like, hey, you know, after, like, I don't know how long he was there for, a couple minutes probably.
Yeah.
He, you know, spitting and drumming loud right there in our face. And I was like, hey, he's not coming any closer. Like, if we're going to shoot, we might as well shoot now. And I could hear AJ saying, you know, he's not going to come closer. And I'm like, yep, whatever. But he just never gave us a good, you know, a really good shot opportunity.
Nope.
But he just kind of, like, strutted in circles and, like, never even really faced us. Like, he kind of was always right, left, or away from us.
Yep.
And it was just not a great shot opportunity, unfortunately. And they just worked off, and we kind of started to run into a time crunch. It was, like, almost 11 o'clock by the time we were, like, we got to get out of here. Like, everybody had kind of stuff to do and whatever, so we had to get out of there. But yeah, I think had I pushed the decoy into the ground another 2 inches, we would have been sitting over at least one bird.
Yep. Yeah. Well, hey, you know, like I said, like I prefaced our hunt with, dude, I was absolutely cursed that week, and I will take the rap for that weird thing happening. Because what you didn't mention was we also had a whole plethora of just weird shit go on.
Oh yeah, prior I forgot to that about happening. The weeds. I forgot about the weed spraying.
Yeah, dude, we drive around this spot after the first, you know, that the initial fly down. We're like, all right, well, let's go. We glass this one strutter up. We don't even glass him. He was just right off the road, like maybe 100, 200, like 150 yards or so.
Yeah.
And in a field that you had permission in, had a hen that was walking away. So we're like, oh, well, perfect. Let's, you know, he's probably getting lonely here. Let's turn around. We'll go down below the crest. We'll walk up over this hill. We'll set up just over it. And we should be able to call him right in. And so Ben was shooting first. We set up, you and I are way down the hill. You're calling, stick the decoy out. And then AJ and Ben are further up the hill, closer to where that Tom's going to crest the hill. And eventually, like, we're calling, he gobbled, what, twice, three times, something
yeah,
like
he
that?
Yeah, he gobbled for sure twice. The second time he gobbled was right when I was sticking the decoy out, which I always wait for everyone to get set up.
That's
and I
right.
call from the decoy just to make it, like, seem like, you know, they say a lot of times that they'll come to the spot you strike them up first.
Right.
Like, where you first strike them up, they'll come to that spot first. So I always try to call from the decoy when everyone's ready. So I waited till everyone got situated, called from the decoy, boom, hammered. I'm like, perfect. This is going just exactly how we planned it. And I heard him gobble once on his, because I think he gobbled right when we got out of the truck.
Yep.
We heard him once. he gobbled once on the walk there, and then right when I called, he gobbled. So I was like, perfect. I mean, he was 100 yards probably. I mean,
yeah,
not real far. And he was coming, like, we were right on the same edge that he's been on this morning. So, like, I thought we had it just absolutely perfect. And then, yeah, so I dropped back, me and you dropped back, and we're calling. All of a sudden, it's just nothing. Like, I thought, like, at least he would have gobbled. Like, even if he didn't come in, we would have heard him. Mm-hmm. So then I'm like, well, should I go up there? It was probably like 10, 15 minutes went by, and I'm like, well, I'm just going to go up there and look and see if he's over there yet. And sure enough, I spot him, and he's probably like 150 yards out, and he was farther than when we saw him before. And then I called to him a couple times, and he started right away, started coming back our direction. Mm-hmm. And then right then, like, he, like, head up, got weird, like, started, you know, going to our right, which was like basically into the woods. And we're like, that was weird. Don't really know what that's about. And right about the time, I'm starting to think to myself, wow, that was weird. I wonder what that, you know, why he did that. I turn to my left, and the neighbor is spraying his gravel by the road ditch for weeds at 7 a.m.
Yep.
And he was literally 100 yards. Yeah, I mean, 100 yards probably from the bird.
Yep.
And just walked the whole road ditch, the whole length of the road, spraying weeds with a hand sprayer.
Absolutely ridiculous, dude. I'd never seen anything like that. I still don't know what possessed that guy to spray weeds at 7:04 on a Friday morning.
Yeah.
Like, let alone like the gravel on the shoulder of a rural country road. You know what I mean? Like, just the weirdest thing any of us had ever seen. It wasn't like he was just doing it around the mailbox. Like, he did for what? Like, probably 150, 300 yards. Yeah, it was insane.
Yeah, it was a long stretch of road.
Absolutely insane, dude. So then that was the first sign of my curse, I guess. And then
I forgot. I don't know how I forgot about that. That was a weird one.
I'd never seen anything like it, dude. So we get back in the truck. We go back where that one bird was hammering below this silo. We walk around, you know, kind of stay down below in this timber and stuff like that. And then we pop up kind of near where he was, stopping and calling the whole time. And nothing, just crickets over there. And it was about that point that all of us had sat down. Well, you were still standing up there calling, but the three of us had sat down on the ground. It's kind of a long, quiet pause. Then you go, one of us here is bad luck, and I don't know who it is. And I just raised my hand. But then, then we went back, and then, AJ spotted those strutters, and then the decoy debacle happened and all that.
Yep.
But, dude, that was.
Yep. I've been catching a lot of hard time. I've been getting a lot of crap for that over the last week.
Dude, hilarious stuff, though. Like, again, like, nothing I'd ever seen. Like, just, like, what are the odds that something like that happens? Because it hadn't been windy at all that day. And it just so happened that right there, like, that first little gust of wind, really, like, the only gust of wind that happened, was just enough to push on the back of that fan and tip him over. Like, you couldn't make the stuff up, man, but.
No, the best part was, too, is that we were, you know, we're all kind of defeated. It was like 9, you know, whatever. We'd been, you know, up since, you know, 3:15 or whatever. And then right before that, we were like, all right, you know, we kind of fired each other up. All right, right now is the time, boys. Let's go get it done. And then sure enough, everything's going perfect, and that stinking decoy blows over.
The magic 10 o'clock hour. Yeah, couldn't.
Yep.
Couldn't save us from our bad luck. But luckily, the bad luck didn't last the rest of the season, because then Sunday rolls around. I punch a tag. I text you. You send me a picture that you guys had punched your tag. How did things play out for you and Ben punching his tag?
Yeah, so Ben's bird Sunday. So I was hunting that, like, general area that we hunted for, like, I think, because I hunted there Friday, Saturday. Which I don't hunt a lot of the same stuff very often. Like, I don't hunt, like, I joke with my buddy that comes with sometimes, like, I'll see how long it takes for me to take you to the same spot twice. And I just don't hunt places a lot. I try to, you know, really keep good care of them, try not to pressure the birds, whatever. So I'd been hunting that like general area to where like that morning we were out, like every time I heard a gobble, I was just like, he's been there all week. Oh, that one's been there all week. And I was just like, I didn't like that. Like I was just getting sick of being in that area, I guess, just kind of had been there for, you know, three days that week. And I was like, whatever, I'm going to go somewhere else. I actually roosted a bird over below that silo that we heard that one gobbling. And I was like, I should go over there because I saw him go over there. But I'm like, nope, I'm going somewhere else. I need new scenery. I need different birds to hunt. Mm-hmm. So I went over to another farm like 15 minutes away or whatever. And this is a farm that you can't see from anywhere. It's just royal. There's rolls and dips and everything. I mean, it's just tough. So I had gone out there a couple weeks ago and I had a free morning and I just went back, sat back there and listened. So I kind of had an idea of where there was birds and I just kind of banked it and, you know, saved it for a rainy day. And while it came up that day, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go there. And we went. I warned Ben. I was like, hey, I know that I'm very particular that I normally always have birds like somewhat idea where they're going to be. I'm like, I'm just warning you. We're going in blind, but I think I know where they're at. So we did that and we got set up and all of a sudden we're sitting there and I said to my old man, I'm like, hey, can you hear drumming? And he's like, yeah, I thought so. And then like, as we sit there and I'm like, yeah, that's definitely. And then all of a sudden I'm like, yeah, that's definitely drumming. Like it took a little bit to figure out where it was. Cause like sometimes it's hard to tell the direction of drumming, right, especially from a tree. But then we're like, okay, it's to our left. Yep. All of a sudden that one starts gobbling. All of a sudden another one starts gobbling. And he's like, the closest one that was drumming, we didn't kill. The one that was a little bit farther out in the finger was probably like 80 yards away. He was probably 100 yards away in the tree. He was gobbling. So we're like, perfect. Didn't hear any hens yet. You know, I still don't know if there was hens in there actually, but they were gobbling decent. Spinning and drumming, whatever. We're in a good spot. The one flew down and he was over over the crest from us. I have the strutter out and I start calling. And I really don't call at birds in the tree too much unless I know they're alone or think they're alone. I just, you know, I don't know why, but I've just always felt like when you got a group of birds with hens that seems like, you know, you can make the hens go the other way and that can, you know, be detrimental to your hunt. But irregardless, they fly down. The one did. He was out in the field just over the crest from us, probably, you know, right around the 100 yard range. Probably I start calling a little bit, get on the slate call a little bit. And like, he gobbles like two or three times. And then all of a sudden, like he's closing the distance. And I'm like, all right, he's going to at least come to this high spot. You know, whether he comes in, I don't know, but you know, he came up to the high spot. He saw that decoy and came in, I mean, on a string. Like, because we had talked about he was going to shoot him a little bit to the left of the decoy because I had some grass kind of in my way. But he came in so fast, we had to just let him go all the way to the decoy, kicked the decoy over, you know, the whole 9 yards. And he was standing, you know, stretched necked on top of the decoy when Ben shot him. We got blood on the decoy. And yeah, it was just, I mean, it's, you know, stuff like that is, you know, what happens after you get your absolute butt kicked for, you know, 2 or 3 days.
Yep.
And it just makes you forget about it. So, you know, see, I already forgot about that, the weed sprain.
Yeah, right.
But
yeah.
Yeah. So it was picture perfect. I mean, the video was awesome. I probably won't put it out till next spring now, but it was, you know, just all around, just a great hunt.
Heck yeah. Yeah, that's a good question. You know, do you tend to try and just read the bird and let that dictate when you're going to shoot him when he comes into the decoys? Or do you like to let him come in and beat on the decoy a little bit and then take your shot when it presents itself, or take the first shot that's, you know, as he's on his way in? Like, what's your kind of ethos with, you know, shooting birds as they're working decoys?
So I pretty much always let them come in unless I have a kid. Like if I have a kid, a youth hunter or someone that's maybe a first time hunter, if there's a bird coming into the decoy and it's like stand stationary, I will say kill them right there. Yep. As long as they're, you know, close. But if they're piling in, I'm just letting them come. Like, even if they're just strut, walk, come. Like, I'm just letting them come. Like, I'm letting them hit the decoy if they want to hit it every time, I guess. With kids, it's probably a little, maybe I have a quicker trigger with myself. I'd let them pound on it and stand on top of it, whatever. But it seems like, you know, with kids especially or new hunters, I always just am trying to keep them calm more so. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, take, you know, you can shoot them whenever you feel like, whatever. But for me or for us, like what we were doing for a couple weeks there is like my buddy Chris was coming filming or taking pictures and for photography. So we were letting them come. Like there's the hunt that I put out a couple weeks ago with my dad, the bird's coming in and I'm calling him off. He's like, I'm going to kill him. I'm like, no. Like, no, you're not. No, no. Like, we let them come into the decoy and stand in the decoys so we could take pictures and do all that before we killed them. For sure. I just think that once they get into the decoy, too, you have a chance to kind of take a breather. Okay, he's here. Like, I always tell people, like, he's got 30 yards before he's out of range. Like, you have all the time in the world. Just, you know, take a breath. Wait for the shot you want, you know, and kill him. But, you know, I think one of the hardest things to do and what people oftentimes do is get so excited when they're coming in and they just shoot at them when they're charging in and then they miss because they're, you know, moving or, you know, walking or whatever. And, you know, it's not always easy, especially when you're excited. But, yeah, I would say always let them come in. Also, I think 90% of the time, that's where you're set up to shoot. So,
right.
You know, or that's where your shooting lane is, or that's where, you know, your window and your blind is set up or whatever. So, yeah, I would try to let them come to the decoys. And if they check up at any point, like they stop, head up, I'm shooting them.
Yep.
That's just, I mean, I'm not letting them even turn and walk away. If they stop, check up, head up, boom, done.
Sure. For sure. I like it. You know, that's on the note of decoys there. You know, you mentioned, even if they start getting nervous and they, you know, you've got 30 yards of, you know, time that they're still in range, basically. How close do you like to set your decoys up?
That's a good question. That's one thing that I'm pretty careful about too, is I always walk my decoys to at least 20 yards, like sure. 20 to 22 yards, probably. I think this morning I was sitting there, I'm like, God, those decoys are close. And I ranged them, they're like 21. So, I always try to go, if it was myself hunting, I would maybe put them closer, like, you know, maybe to that 14, 15 yard range, mm-hmm. just because I'm comfortable making that shot. But if it's any new hunter, any kid, any general person that's not myself, I'm putting them at 20 to 22 yards. I just think with the shotguns these days, with TSS, with turkey chokes, with whatever, you're much better off having them at 20 to 25 yards. Just, you know, I like, you know, I don't want a kid to have to, you know, shoot a golf ball at a turkey. I want him to shoot a basketball at it, right. You know? So absolutely. I just think your chances go up. And also I think when they're not right in your lap, you know, you tend to not get so excited that you lose your mind, you know? Yep. I guess, I don't know if that some people that have done it probably make sense, but it's just the closer they are, the more intense it is. So
for sure. Yeah, definitely. That's about what I set my decoys at. I think I put them at like 25 when I was hunting the other day.
Yeah.
On Sunday and everything. No, that's really good to know. And that, like you said, gives you 30 yards of insurance, you know, all around that decoy to, you know, make that shot if they do, for whatever reason, hang up or they do get nervous, right. And all that sort of stuff. That's a really, really good point.
Yep.
Yeah, dude, one of the things that, you know, I took away from our hunt together and everything too, was just like your style of calling. I think a lot of us see, you know, stuff on YouTube, or we've had success in the past where it's a lot more cutting, a lot more clucks, you know, a few yelps and stuff like that. But it's a lot of like, pop, 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 and then like yelps and stuff like that after. And I had been doing that, you know, earlier in the week and everything, and had success on the birds that were unpressured. But as soon as they started feeling that pressure and they had a couple of close calls, I started struggling. And excuse me, you know, then it was like I was struggling to get a bird to gobble, and I was struggling to get birds to come in. And it was almost like I convinced myself that they probably knew it was me, because they'd heard that sequence before. And was, you know, it's like anyone, you find someone you don't like and you hear their voice after a while, it's kind of like, ew, stop. Like, I'm steering clear of that. But, you know, one of the things, even like when those birds flew down and everything, your calling was a lot of soft, long strings of yelps. Like, I was sitting there counting them as you were doing it. It was like 12 to 15 or 10 to 15 yelps at a time, and like just, you know, real consistent, real soft and stuff like that. And then if you needed to get louder, you'd get louder. And that is what I took with me to kill that bird on Sunday, was just lots of yelps. I didn't cut a single time. I maybe did like two or three cuts here and there and a little bit of purring, but for the most part, it was just yelps and stuff like that. And even when we were, when we were looking for birds and you had the box call and you were just ripping on that thing, it was the same 10 to 15 yelps when we were working those birds that were strutting in the field, you know, coming up towards the strutting or strutter decoy. It's the same series of yelps and stuff like that. And it was kind of like, okay, I don't need to overcomplicate it. Like, I can sit there and I can just rip yelps at them and they're going to come in. Like, it probably sounds more natural. It probably sounds a lot calmer than a bunch of cutting and a bunch of purring and this whole symphony of different calls, right, and stuff like that. And like I said, that's what led to me working that bird in, because it was totally different than what I'd been doing. And ended up on Sunday, went back after that bird that was roosted up to the left of the draw, at the head of that left ditch. But I was across the draw, up above him, but even with him on this field edge. And so I crept up there and threw my decoys out. I had a tree that was like perfectly picked out, and you know, set the decoys out at 25 or so and waited for that first gobble. And he gobbled first. He gobbled first every single day, but he gobbles first, took my time, knew exactly where he was, set the decoys out, got back in there. The night before, I'd actually heard birds roost or birds gobbling on the same side, like on the ridge that I was on. And I figured they'd come in from the right, because usually they do. They're roosted up kind of like behind our house on this ridge, and then they fly out into the top part of like the highest point in the field, and then they walk that high point. And then after that, they usually see the decoys, give us the middle feather, and then take off. But this guy was fired up, and for whatever reason, he didn't have a single hen with him. There were no other gobblers with him. He was just all alone. So I got really lucky there. And, you know, after the first couple of gobbles, once it started getting light out and everything, just did that soft series of yelps and everything like that. But, you know, that 10 to 15 yelps, he hammered right away, you know, kept hammering and stuff like that. I waited a few times for him to gobble, called at him again and everything. Then I heard wing beats, heard him fly down, and I could hear him. It sounded like he was out in the field. So I thought, well, hopefully he'll do his big loop like he did that one time, and he'll come all the way around this ridge in the field, and he'll pop out. I'll see him way out in the distance to my left, and he'll work hopefully all the way in, because my decoys were kind of at like a little rise in the field. Luckily, he decided to just fast track the whole deal, drop down through the timber, and then pop up maybe 150, 180 yards from me, just down the side. But he gobbles after I call once again, and hammers down to my left. And I'm like, okay, shoot. Like, he's coming to play ball. This is good.
Right.
I get set up, you know, kind of angled to the left where I think he's going to come from. And, all of a sudden I see this black blob pop out in the gray light, and he starts working out there. I see his big red head, yelp at him just a couple more times. And he hammers out in the field, pops into strut, starts working my direction, gets up there, sees the decoys, and just comes in on a rope for 100 yards or so, you know, strutting, walking, doing his thing, just putting on a show. And then eventually got in close enough. He stopped, didn't really do much or anything, but he was just kind of working his thing. And I had a good shot, and he was straight in front of me and let drive. And that was that. I don't know what the hell happened after I shot. but I jacked up my knee and I'm pretty sure I dislocated my thumb in the process of like getting that bird. I don't know how. Like I've got like weak thumb joints, like just from like football and stuff growing up.
Yeah.
But dude, I like finally like got this bird, you know, it expired and quit flopping and stuff like that. Unloaded my gun, I set it down. And I was just like, what the hell? Like, I feel like I just got my ass kicked right now. Like my hand was like, my thumb was all swollen. My knee hurt when I went to like bend down. I was like, no way I like tore my ACL, like blew my knee out chasing a damn turkey. Luckily I didn't, but it was just like, just freaky stuff happening. And then looked at the clock. It was like 5:38 or 5:39 or something. And texted you that I got one. You texted me that you guys got one and took her home, got her cleaned up. And then, girlfriend and I, went into Madison, got a couple drinks, had some lunch, and then came back. And I was like, you know what? I found some morels over at the neighbor's place the other day. I wonder if there's any more over there. Cause I'd never found morels before ever. That was like the one lucky thing in all of my bad luck that I had. That was the one stroke of luck that I had actually after I bumped a flock of birds and I dropped down to my knees and I was just kind of creeping through the timber. I like looked where I was going to put my hand. And there was a morel right next to it. So I was like, no shit. Okay. They actually, they do exist. I can actually find one of these things. And so, picked those. And then, that day I was like, you know, for 3 years now, Josh Raley, the former host of this show, he and I, one of the first episodes we did, was we set out in pursuit of the Driftless Triple Crown, the trifecta. We were going to try and shoot a bird, find a morel, and catch a trout on a fly. And we went out there, we struggled, just got our butts kicked that day and like only caught trout. And it was fun, but it's always been something that's been in the back of my mind. And, so we got back from our date and I was like, you want to run over to the neighbors and see if we can find another couple of morels? And she was like, yeah, sure. Why not? And so we ran over there, hopped the fence, ran up to this point and, we're looking around and stuff. And I was like, I don't know if it's going to happen. I don't know. And so I'm kind of down in this thicket. She's a little bit further up the hill and all that. And, she goes, hey, come here. And I was like, do you have one? She's like, well, I think so. I don't know. And then I go up there and sure as shit, there's a little golf ball sized morel poking out in between all the dried leaves and everything. And so we picked that one. And then I looked about 10 feet to the right and there was another one. So we picked that one too. And then I'm like, all right, we got our morels. Let's run back and let's go catch a trout and everything. So we ran down and just grabbed the rod and, you know, threw on the sandals and everything, hopped down in the creek in front of my folks' house where I grew up and, worked our way up and 5 or 6 casts later, caught a nice 12-inch brookie and completed the trifecta.
Had a heck of a day.
Yeah. Yeah. It worked out well, but yeah, it was, I don't know, a very, very sweet ending to one hell of a week of turkey hunting. I'll put it that way. But
yeah, that's a heck of a day. And like I said, that's just the stuff that happens after you get your butt kicked.
Right. Exactly.
you put your time in and you know, that stuff's going to happen.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. Well, dude, it's Thursday, right? Yeah. It's Thursday of, fifth season right now, as we record this, it's going to come out on the last day of fifth season with just 6th season ahead. What advice do you have for folks who are going to be getting out there chasing turkeys in this final week?
So let's see. My advice would be, use hen decoys, use only hen decoys, and get close to the roost. I think, you know, if you have the ability to get out there after, you know, right at dark and right after dark and maybe rip on an owl hooter, see where they're roosted. You know, this time of year, the trees are getting green and the cover's getting, you know, grown up. The woods are getting thicker. It's a lot easier to get closer to birds. Mm-hmm. I think, even, you know, in the dark, yes, it helps, but it especially helps during the daytime. Like, you know, when they're on the ground, if you need to make a move on them, you know, now you're going to be able to move on birds faster and easier and get up, you know, to field edges and stuff when, you know, the grass is tall and, you know, that stuff I think is huge. And I think now is the time of year to get aggressive. I mean, start, you know, if you hear a gobbling turkey, get after them, start calling, close the distance. I think this time of year is a pretty overlooked time of year for, I think the hens spend a lot more time nesting and it can be some of your, I've seen where hens literally fly down and go immediately to root or to their nest right now.
Right.
and birds are immediately by themselves. So just don't be afraid to get aggressive on the calls. And what else? Other thing is try new spots, try new areas. If you got spots you have permission or you can get permission that you haven't been to or you can't see or don't know if there's birds there, it's a good time of year to go into a spot blind, get in there, you know, about time they're going to start gobbling, hear them gobble and try to get set up on them. Like I said, you can move through the woods a lot easier with the, you know, the foliage on the trees and then in the woods. And it's just a fun time of year to be aggressive. And, you know, if you mess it up or screw it up, it's late in the year. So, you know, it is what it is. He'll be there next year.
Yep. Absolutely, man. I love it. That's great advice for folks listening. Pay attention to those birds that are, because they're all getting lonely these days. Like you said, yep. You know, a lot of those hens are on the nest and everything. And I feel like over this last week, really in the last like handful of days, I feel like we've seen that big shift of, you know,
agreed.
Earlier in fourth period, they were really, you know, the hens were still kind of out and about. And around the time that, you know, I ended up killing that bird and Ben killed that bird, that was when it seemed like, okay, all these hens, like suddenly they're way less vocal. I'm seeing way fewer of them.
Yep.
And I'm seeing a lot more bachelor groups running around that are all fired up and still trying to sort out the pecking order and all that sort of stuff. So,
yep, I agree.
Yeah. Yeah. It should be good, man. So folks, good luck to you getting out there. And Drew, before we wrap up here, you've mentioned a YouTube channel. You've also got a podcast. Where can folks go to check out some of this turkey footage and learn a little bit more about you?
Yeah. So you can find all my turkey hunts. I've got a handful of them up already this year on Sundown Outdoors YouTube channel, just a for fun YouTube channel that me and my buddies just kind of post our hunts on. It's nothing serious. I'm not trying to be professional. So some of it's kind of rough. Some of the, you know, footage is rough. The edit's rough. You know, it is what it is, but it's just for fun. We don't take it too serious, but of course we love a good video, you know, every now and then. So yeah, Sundown Outdoors on YouTube. My podcast is Predator Podcast, and then probably the best place to find me, reach me, communicate with me is on Instagram, PredatorPodcast_Drew. I answer every message I get, and you know, I try to stay pretty active on there. So yeah, if you ever have questions or, you know, feel free to reach out and yeah, follow along with me there and check out my podcast on all the platforms that there is. It's on YouTube as well. So yeah, Predator Podcast or, you know, Sundown Outdoors YouTube channel.
Yeah, absolutely. Folks, definitely go check out the podcast. If you've ever even considered predator hunting, coyote hunting, I mean, shoot, you guys were piling up foxes, coyotes, bobcats. I mean, just about everything, it seemed like this past winter here, man. And yeah,
yep,
there's a lot of dogs hitting the ground. That was
yep.
I'm always blown away by the count that you wind up with at the end of the year and everything. It just blows my mind. But dude, I really appreciate the heck out of your time and you know, taking time out of your schedule, especially in the midst of turkey season here. But dude, good luck to you and in the coming days and this next week here. And hey, I'm sure we'll see some gripping grins from you soon. That's all for this week's episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you like this episode, be sure to subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're at it, if you could leave me a 5-star review, I would appreciate that a ton. You can also follow along with my outdoor adventures on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube at The Wisconsin Sportsman. That's also the best way to get a hold of me to suggest topics, guests, or questions you'd like me to explore on this show. Big thanks to our awesome partners, XOP, Onyx, Huntworth, Good Chance Fly Fishing, and the Wisconsin chapter of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. Please go support the brands and support this show. And if you're looking for more awesome outdoor content, go check out thesportsmansempire.com, where you'll find a ton of other outdoor podcasts. And until next time, make sure you make the time to get outside and enjoy the incredible natural resources that are ours as Wisconsin sportsmen.
Right now, get up to 20% off select online storage solutions. Put heavy-duty HDX totes to good use, protecting what's important to you. The solid, impact-resistant design prevents cracking, and the clear base and sides make items easy to find, even when the totes are stacked. Find select online shelving and tote storage up to 20% off at the Home Depot to organize every room in your home, from your garage to your attic. Visit HomeDepot.com. How doers get more done.
Your little one grew 3 inches overnight. Adorable. Also, expensive. Sell their pint-sized pieces on Depop and list them in minutes with no selling fees. Because somewhere, a dad refuses to pay full price for the clothes his kids will outgrow tomorrow. And he's ready to buy your son's entire wardrobe right now. Consider your future growth spurt budget secured. Start selling on Depop, where taste recognizes taste. Payment processing fees and boosting fees still apply. See website for details.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.